And I think we're joined by Zafar Benkesh. Are you there, sir?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am.
It's very good to be talking to you. I've just been speaking about Syria with commentators, one from Syria, Stephen Sahuni.
Right.
And he wants to know if the Western media is covering or talking about this latest outrage by the armed gangs calling themselves ISIS. They have many names, I notice, and so I can't keep track. But and I was just saying that, yes, of course, they do report, but as they report, it always becomes an excuse for NATO to drop bombs on somebody.
Yes,
rather than to recognize the Syrian government. Why don't they simply solve this problem by recognizing Syria and helping kill off these mercenaries?
Absolutely. In fact, these mercenaries perpetrated a massacre yesterday in a town called Dayr al-Zur. Now, we don't hear about that. We keep on hearing about Madaya, which, of course, is a town which was evacuated from these terrorists, and the Syrian army entered the town. And all of the reports that are given in the corporate media simply talk about the starving people in Madaya, which in fact is not true. Unfortunately, they have been using photographs from other locales, even from Lebanon, starving children and so on.
Any starving kid will do. Just
exactly.
Slap it in and people...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And regrettably, I mean, you know, sometimes it's so amazing. Even the BBC, which is, I think, a little bit more sophisticated than many other outlets, but even the BBC was doing that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, we had known about the BBC's thing back in 2013 when they had used a photograph from the dead bodies of children in Iraq. And they had used that in July of 2013, alleging that the Syrian army had carried out this massacre. And that image, the photographer of that particular image, who had sold that photograph to Getty Images, he actually protested to the BBC officially. He said that this was my photograph that was taken back in 2003 in Iraq, and these are children that were killed by American bombing, and this has nothing to do with Syria. And then the BBC issued a very sort of tepid kind of apology, saying, well, you know, we made a mistake because in the heat of war, we just came across this photograph, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's a heat of war, so we thought we'd increase the lying and distortion.
You
know,
exactly.
Saying, you know, you would think, heat of war, we don't have any news there yet. We'll wait until we get something solid. Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
Here's something sensational you should hear.
Exactly. Just put it there. And they've, of course, assumed that most people wouldn't know. And I think their assumption was correct, except for their misfortune that the photographer himself contacted the BBC. And so they couldn't deny that.
They found a guy who had integrity and created a problem.
Exactly.
And of course, he had to think, what's his future, right?
Absolutely.
If he calls them out, he knows they're not going to ask him for anything or pay him for anything in the future.
Yes. So basically, this is the situation that we have. But I think there is good news coming out of Syria now, because the Syrian army is making considerable progress on many fronts. And in fact, there are a number of agreements that have been signed through the UN whereby these terrorists have been allowed, together with their families, to leave the areas. For instance, the latest was Al-Bab, which is in Aleppo province. And in fact, their Turkish handlers advised them to leave Al-Bab because the Syrian army is only 2 or 3 kilometers away from the city center, and they would be there very soon. So it's mm-hmm. best that these terrorists leave that town. So they fled from there to Raqqa, which is their base, but they're actually gradually being pushed out. And there are reports coming out of Syria that the battle for Aleppo itself, which is the largest city in Syria and also the commercial hub of Syria, is about to take place. And wow. If Aleppo were to be liberated from the clutches of these terrorists, then naturally the game would be over. Then these mm-hmm. terrorists would have very little else to be able to manage anything. And one of the interesting aspects is that, in fact, surveys have been done inside Syria, and they have found that these terrorists have virtually no support among the Syrian people. What they do is they take people hostage and then hold them hostage in order to blackmail the UN or other agencies to provide them food. In fact, when journalists entered Madaya, the residents themselves that were trapped inside there, they told them that there was no shortage of food as such in the town. What was happening was that these terrorists would hijack the UN convoys, and then they start to sell the food at exorbitant prices. Mm. And naturally, the vast majority of people in the town had and have no money, so they were starved. Although there was food that was provided by the UN, and the Syrian government had allowed delivery of food aid, but these terrorists would take over, their warehouses would be stocked with food, so the terrorists would be eating, and those people that that can afford to buy at exorbitant prices, they would eat, the rest, they just tell them to go starve, and, you know, as far as they are concerned, they don't care, and they simply let them suffer the consequences. Yeah.
Their conduct is a profile of a true mercenary.
Absolutely. The vast majority of them are not Syrians at all.
Yeah.
They have come from outside, and they have caused mayhem in that country. In fact, you know, it's so sad because Syria was, and it still remains, the most pluralistic and cosmopolitan society in the entire Middle East. I mean, you know, you have... for instance, in Syria, there are cities where right from the time of Prophet Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, and his disciples...
They still speak the language.
Exactly.
The language he spoke.
Exactly. They spoke that language, Aramaic, and a lot of Christian monuments and historical places were destroyed by these terrorists. Now, just imagine, for more than 1,400 years, Muslims who lived in Syria preserved these places. They lived in total harmony with the Christian community, never destroyed their churches or anything like that. And when these terrorists came there, they ransacked the place. They destroyed thousands of years of history in Syria. Palmyra, for instance, is one city that has been virtually destroyed. There are mm-hmm. great many Christian monuments over there and, you know, churches, etc., that these terrorists destroyed that had been preserved and protected by Muslims for more than 1,400 years. And so we see this and regrettably, like, you know, here we are, you know, when we in the West, when the media talks about, if let's say there is a government in any part of the Muslim world that does not take care of its Christian minority or something, then there's a lot of noise made about it. Mm-hmm. And they even exaggerate things. And yet, here in Syria, these Western-backed terrorists have destroyed Christian history dating back 2,000 years, and there is hardly any mention of it.
Yes.
So one begins to see the terrible, terrible, cynical game that is being played in order to undermine the legitimate government of Syria. Bashar al-Assad has been democratically elected. Whether we agree with his policies or not, that's a choice that everybody has. But that's a choice that the Syrian people would make, who they want as their president, mm-hmm. not these mercenaries and terrorists that are flooded from countries like Saudi Arabia. You know, how many elections has Saudi Arabia had? These head choppers, the head chopping techniques these terrorists have learned from Saudi Arabia. You know, at the beginning of this month, the Saudis executed 47 people, including a very, very senior religious figure by the name of Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, and he was not given a fair trial. Mm-hmm. Even under Saudi law, he should not have been executed because he had done nothing wrong. All he had called for was that the rights of the people of Saudi Arabia should be respected, that they should be given their basic rights. There's nothing in the law. No law in any country can sort of execute a person for saying that.
Well, to them, we sell military equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Canada, unfortunately, is also selling them $15 billion worth of military equipment. The previous equipment that Canada supplied to the Saudi regime, it has been used both against the people of Bahrain, because Saudi Arabia invaded Bahrain in March of 2011, when there was an uprising against that illegitimate regime over there, a minority regime. The Saudis used Canadian equipment. The Canadian government actually has not denied that. The Defense Department simply said that, we know that they've
used
it.
Business and politics are two different things, they say.
We have warned them that they should not be using this equipment against civilians. And to the best of our knowledge, they have not used it against civilians, although they have deployed it over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't deploy armored personnel carriers because people are going for a picnic. Mm-hmm. They're deployed in order to terrorize people. And the same equipment has been used in the eastern provinces of Saudi Arabia, where the predominantly Shia population is, and where Sheikh Nimr was from. A lot of terrible things have happened in the eastern province of Saudi Arabia. So we have this terrible, terrible situation whereby the Saudis continue to indulge in gross human rights violations. In fact, Canada's own report on the human rights violations, which of course, unfortunately, the Liberal government is not bringing out into the public domain. It is known that the Saudis are involved in gross human rights violations of their own people. Last week, at least the BBC, CBC carried a story about Samar Badawi, who's a human rights activist, and her brother, who's mm-hmm. actually facing, he's been lashed 100 lashes, and he's been sentenced to 1,000 lashes because he put a blog on the website demanding human rights or respect for human rights. And his family members, some of his family members, Rifat Badawi, are in Canada, mm-hmm. and others are still there. And his sister was also arrested. Her brother is being tortured. Samar Badawi's former husband, Waleed Abul Khair, who's a human rights lawyer, he was imprisoned because he defended other human rights campaigners. That's the kind of judicial system that you have in Saudi Arabia.
Amazing.
That a lawyer wants to defend his clients, and the judge says, no, why are you defending these people that are demanding their rights?
We give you 100 lashes while we're at it.
Exactly, and put you in jail. And poor Waleed Abul Khair is still in jail. In fact, he wrote an article in November of 2013 in the Washington Post, and in which he said that Saudi Arabia has no codified law. So whatever verdict is delivered at the whim of the judge. If the judge doesn't like you, he can sentence you to death. If the judge likes you, he'll say, okay, you've been punished enough, you spent a few weeks in prison, you can go home. Mm-hmm. And this has literally happened. And let me give you an example. In beginning of 2012, there was a Saudi preacher who used to have a program on television in Saudi Arabia. His name was Lehan Al-Ghamdi. He accused his own 5-year-old daughter of losing her virginity. I don't know what is in these people's minds. How, obnoxious and terrible can they get? And then, you know what he did with his own 5-year-old daughter? He took a metal rod, then he raped his own 5-year-old daughter with the metal rod. Then he beat her so badly that he broke her back and her skull. Mm-hmm. And the poor 5-year-old girl died in hospital. And when this preacher was brought to court, the judge said, oh, you have suffered enough. The time you spent in jail, that's enough. So you are free. There was such an outcry in the kingdom that people sent petitions to the king himself. And they said, how can you let this man go after he has committed such a crime? So, of course, he was put on trial again. And in 2014, the judge ordered him to pay a fine to the girl's mother, because he had divorced the girl's mother and married again, and he was imprisoned for 8 years in jail and said that he should be lashed 800 times. He went to prison for a few months. He was never lashed. And on August 29th, another judge released him from prison for lack of evidence.
Thank you.
Now imagine, what do you mean? I mean, the girl is dead. The 5-year-old girl was dead. The hospital said they confirmed as to what had happened to this girl, how she had died, and it says, oh, there is not enough evidence, so we let this man go.
And we have wonderful relations with that state.
With that state.
And it's totally arbitrary.
Yeah.
Absolute monarchy. And we embargo and break off relations with Syria.
Yeah. And you know, where the Syrian government is fighting against the terrorists that have been unleashed by this regime in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And yet, regrettably, our own government in the United States, the U.S. is selling them $100 billion worth of weapons. Britain is selling them $20 billion worth of weapons. France is selling them $11 billion worth of weapons. And look what they're doing with those weapons. Give it to these terrorists, or the Saudis use them to bomb dirt for Yemen.
Which, you have to assume, I mean, it's apparent that that's what we want them to do.
Exactly. Like, you know,
if they didn't do the bombing, and if they didn't do the other evil things in Lebanon and elsewhere, then we wouldn't give them the money.
Yeah,
or the
unfortunately.
Weapons. By the way, I have to ask you, there's a couple of questions that emerged today, and I want to make sure I ask. One is that the leader of Pakistan, one of the leaders of Pakistan, is in Riyadh today.
Right.
And there's reports of some sort of readjustment of positions going on. What's that about?
Yes. Actually, if the Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, as well as the Army Chief, General Raheel Sharif, they're not related, but they are both there. And publicly, what they are saying is that they want to mediate between Saudi Arabia and Iran, because Saudi Arabia broke off diplomatic relations with Iran on January the 3rd after, or January the 4th after Sheikh Nimr was executed or beheaded by the Saudis. And then there were protests in Tehran, and some overzealous people actually attacked the Saudi embassy in Tehran.
Yeah.
So the Saudis immediately broke off diplomatic relations with Iran, and of course there has been a heated exchange of words. So the Pakistani...
Do you think that'll go forward?
I doubt it very much.
A headache between the two?
I don't think, because the Saudis are not interested in improving their relations with
Iran.
And
how about Pakistan? Is Pakistan going to be unhappy if their offer is refused?
No, I don't think so, because Pakistan has very close relations with Saudi Arabia. And the Saudis, in fact, last week, the Saudi Deputy Crown Prince and Defense Minister, Mohammed bin Salman, he came to Pakistan with a very lucrative offer of investments in Pakistan. So what I suspect is that the Pakistanis have gone there also to sort of firm up that agreement that there should be investment in Pakistan, and they're using this cover that they want to mediate between Iran and Saudi Arabia, because tomorrow they'll be heading to Tehran, and Nawaz Sharif would be meeting President Rouhani of Iran.
Uh-huh.
But Iran has always said that we are willing to sit down with the Saudis and talk these things over. We don't want to muddy relations. We don't want to have further instability over here. But the Saudis are absolutely determined to create instability in the region. Because
they seem to be betting the house, as gamblers would say.
Absolutely, exactly they are.
Maybe we should thank them for that.
There are actually reports that the Saudis are digging their own grave, because the way they are conducting themselves, none of their policies is working, you see. So they are really, really in a bind. And that's because Iran has sort of, you know, had this agreement with the U.S. and the other countries to lift sanctions, etc. So that has really upset Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, because they're slipping. Their grip is weakening. This is Zafar Bengash, by the way, and it's crescent-online.net.
Yes.
And another development that I found sort of striking today, the two Christian leaders in Lebanon met.
Yes.
Aoun and
Samir Gaiga, yes.
Now, that seems very significant, too, because...
Yes.
I guess Gaiga is endorsing Aoun.
That's correct. This
and
is very
Hezbollah is part of this process.
This is very significant development because Samir Jaja, as he's pronounced in Lebanon, was a head of a Christian militia over there. And General Aoun, of course, was a very respected head of the Lebanese army. And he's been trying to run for the president because under the Lebanese constitution, only a Christian can be a president. But some factions within the Christian community were opposing it. So Samir Jaja's endorsement of Aoun, I think, is a very, very significant development because now...
Well, remember that only, what, a year ago Hezbollah was finished?
Yeah, exactly.
According to, and they're part of this coalition.
Yes, exactly. So Hezbollah has been supporting General Aoun for the presidency, but Lebanon hasn't had a president since 2014. Because of this political uncertainty. So I think this is a good development, a positive development, and it will help bring about stability in Lebanon for sure, yes.
Yeah, it seems very important. I was quite surprised.
Yes.
People forget about Lebanon, but Lebanon's the essential piece of all this.
Yes.
And speaking of peace, I'll ask you the last question, is what is going to happen? The talks are scheduled for the 25th.
Yes.
Are the Saudi and their showmen are going to be able to produce anybody who's credible to go to these meetings?
Even if they do, it doesn't really matter because the real game is on the ground in Syria. So whether they meet,
you have to play the game. That's true.
So whether they meet in Vienna or in any other capital, you know, it doesn't really matter too much. Mm-hmm. There are sort of doubts about the meeting taking place at all because of what's happening in Syria currently, and this terrible deterioration of relations between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But Iran has said that it will attend. Mm-hmm. And if the Saudis don't show up or their men don't show up, it doesn't really matter to the Syrian government because they are making progress. So I don't think that will change the ground reality.
I think a lot of people would be happy if Syrians said, oh, never mind, we're going to clear up the garbage and throw it out.
Exactly.
And we'll go about our business.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Zafar Bengash, we're very grateful. You covered a lot of ground. Thank
yes.
you very much.
It's my great pleasure, Phil. Take
okay.
care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Zafar Bengash and his crescent-online.net. And I think we've covered the ground. I remind you again, it's Martin Luther King's birthday, and that, yes, Hollywood has not nominated any black Americans actors for an Academy Award, which tells you something about the culture. So that's their way of celebrating it. Well, I want to thank Hanny very much, and this is Phil Taylor, and we'll see you next week.
Did you know there are now 8 different ways in which you can listen?